Welcome along once again to the official Scottish Rugby podcast. Just Rach and I for now this week. Rach, how are we?
Yeah, really good. Thank you. How are you?
Not bad, not bad. Back to normal after some international window. Back to work.
Back to work and back to club as well. So, yeah, we crashed back to reality, but it's been good to get back in with Laugh of Lightning this week. We've head to Exeter Chiefs on Saturday away at Sandy Park. So,
chasing Chloe around the park then.
I think chasing is an accurate word that I will use for that. I'll hopefully not be anywhere near it, if I'm honest. Leave that to the backs to deal with, but yeah, hopefully I'll not be the one having to chase her.
Well, I think we'll have a wee look back at the Open Nations series. I look forward to the Six Nations as well. We've got URC action back up and running, we've got GB Sevens this weekend, so a bit of rugby to have a look at. But I suppose the place to start would be the Japan fixture. You were along, we spoke to you at the game on Saturday. What was your assessment really of the game against Japan?
I think Scotland would maybe be a wee bit disappointed in aspects of how they played. But one thing I would say is I think Japan probably played the best that they played out of all their fixtures in the autumn. What I was quite impressed with was their speed and organisation of defence. There wasn't many options. I think Scotland maybe anticipated having a few more options to attack through them, but their fold was so quick and so accurate that they really filled the field pretty well. And then when they had possession, they kept it for a long period of time, whereas I think Scotland potentially tried to ship the ball a little bit too quickly and didn't necessarily earn that right to go wide sometimes and maybe kind of floundered a few chances because of that. But a win in terms of playing against a good Japan team is always a positive, but I think they probably feel a wee bit like they've left some points out there.
Yeah, I'd agree. It was almost a wee bit flat at the end of the game, and it's strange because, you know, 4-1 against a team who've caused us trouble in the recent past, who are really dangerous, who maybe not playing, well, definitely not playing as they were playing 2 years ago in Japan, but they're still fully quality players and pose different threats, really. Yeah. So a 4-1 victory and 3 wins from 4, you know, over the series, I got the feeling I should have been kind of more content after the game. I felt a wee bit frustrated after the game. I think it was, as you say, when Japan controlled a lot of the game because they held the possession for so long. And Gregor hinted at it after the game as well, that they're a team that are actually quite happy to hold possession, even if they're in their own third, even if they're near their own goal line. They'll keep playing. And because they're so accurate in or around the breakdown or retaining possession, it's really difficult for the opposition, I think, to dictate the game. And I thought when Scotland were good, they were very good. I thought the tries were excellent, clinical, really well finished, but we just never had enough possession. And I suppose the other frustration is the number of penalties for the same offence. I mean, you see it in the game the whole time now. Quite rightly, I like it in terms of the referee penalising the tackle for not rolling away. Sometimes it look harsh, but prevention's better than cure, isn't it? I mean, don't get on that wrong side and you won't be trapped in or you won't be penalised. But that would be a frustration, I think, over maybe the series as well, the number of penalties for mainly that offence.
Yeah, I think it's a learning point for all of us as players at the minute in that the penalties are usually coming when we're going to steal the ball. So like as a jacker now, you've not only just got to check whether, you know, the ball's available and it's on to Jackal, but whether your player's even slightly in the way, because a lot of the penalties are now coming because the Jackal has been fine and they're on ball. So they're mad because they've not won the penalty. So if there's a player in the way, you've almost got to make that split second decision as a Jackal that, okay, I can't even try to contest because they're going to ping it. If I get the contest, they're going to ping it because the player's slightly in the way. And it's so marginal. Like some of the, I've been frustrated watching it at times thinking that like he's out the way, like, or like she's out the way, and it's, but like refs are obviously really hot on it, and I like it, like I like these rules which kind of make things a lot more clear and clean cut, but yeah, that it does, if you are like a player who is kind of a jackling type, it's frustrating because you see them getting super mad at their teammates now where they've made a good steal and their teammates that little bit slow in getting out of the contact and then they've gone the other way. So it just adds in a little extra decision making to that aspect.
You see it quite often when we watch a game on TV that the referee's actually says, no, you were fine, it was he or it was her that was the problem. Can he single out the tackler for not getting out of there, and you can see, you're right, the player who has been overtook the ball, Jack, and it's like, oh, come on.
Yeah.
But it's I think it's a there's a it created a bit of a catch 22 at the weekend, I think, in the Scotland Japan game, because I felt Scotland should have jackaled harder. And I think Jamie and Hamish are well, we know how brilliant they are at that. They love it. But I actually think because there were so many penalties for being on that wrong side, exactly as you're saying, it maybe stopped that threat. And then if you think about what we said earlier on about Japan having loads and loads of possession, there's one of your main opportunities to get possession back that you're maybe not committing to because of that that threat of being caught on the wrong side. Or the other one is a really dominant hit, right? Rather than being passive, like just a real dominant hit. But quite often, if you go for that dominant hit and not quite get it right, by default, you do end up on the wrong side. And then, well, you'll know, opposition teams ain't going to let you get out of there quickly, are they?
No.
Do you work on pinning teams in or players in, or is it just crafty?
No, I think you do. Yeah, definitely. I think, you know, that's part of it. But now, even still, with especially the laws changing a little bit, there's a lot of the time where you think you're fine and you're pinning someone in subtly, and the ref's like, no, you're holding them in. So it's a process, I guess, in every single game where you have to kind of see where the ref is on things, play around for a little bit within the start of the game, and then you've just got to be savvy with it. Because like you say, if not, you end up racking up penalties for really minimal things, and then it can really put you on the back foot.
What you're saying here is it's another decision that has to be made in a split second.
Yeah.
One way or other, and it's going to have a net effect one way or other. But it's just for all the bravery and the courage and the strength involved in a jackal or a tackle contest, the forefront of it is decision being made, you know, within a split second, whether you're successful or not. But the Autumn Sea is a whole while. Going back to Saturday, actually, Stuart Hogg became his leading ever try score, 25. Tops the charts there, and it was a cracking try. I said that I thought the tries that Scotland scored were excellent. That one was a really good, great finish with Hoggy, obviously, and you could see his big smile on his face.
Yeah, he was absolutely over.
But the build-up was a good team try, wasn't it? Shifting the target, different players at scrum half, playing quickly, moving the ball, attacking space, and Hoggy gets the record.
Yeah, and I think the scary thing with Hoggy is he's got so much of his career still ahead of him. Like, he's breaking records at this point, but he's got a lot. Like, he's getting better and better still. So I've got no doubt that he'll probably score all of those again. He's in a brilliant place, and I think he's leading the team really well as well, which is a massive step forward for Scotland. And it's a pretty exciting time.
And a couple of new caps as well, Dylan Richardson and Javen Sebastian, adding to the, now off the top of my head, what was the total of new caps? It must have been up over 10 or 12. Was it 8 in week one? 11, 12 new caps. And I think it's a nod to the environment that the squad and Gregor have created, that the Wolf came in and done well. I think it's a difficult thing.
Yeah, 100%.
To play well, but like, and you might get 5 or 6 or 3 or 4 of the 11 coming in the stand, but when you've got 11 of 11 or 12 of 12, we'll need to double check my stats, coming in, all making an impact, making a difference, is probably points at the how welcoming an environment is, but almost how positive an environment is as well.
Oh yeah, definitely. I think as well, the kind of, I guess, the cohesion, you know, when they come on the pitch, there's no kind of disruption to the way Scotland are trying to play. It's very much, you know, like for like change, and it fits in pretty well. And I think that shows how well they're obviously training away from here, that you can slot into an international against, you know, the world champion, someone like Josh Bayliss coming off the bench and slot in kind of seamlessly, and it not make any difference to the cohesion of different aspects of the game. So I guess it's a nod to the coaches in terms of how well they're obviously training in the week to have that, and have obviously given people those opportunities within training to then be able to slot in match as well.
Yeah, so 3 wins from the 4. It was the one game against South Africa that was a defeat. And felt frustrated after that as well. But that's what South Africa do. They make you almost look a poorer team than what they are because of the physicality and the pressure they apply through different ways. But on the whole, I think it's the most positive thing I can say is, like, 3 wins from 4 is good. It could have been better. But the best part about it is we come out of the 4 tests with a lot to work on, and you feel as if you've underachieved in some ways. So looking ahead to Six Nations, that's a good position to be in.
Yeah, I think we've got a brilliant platform now to push on. definitely think we're seeing one of the best Scotland teams that we've seen in a long time. And I think the depth we have across every single position has been a massive step forward in the last couple of years. And like you say, the culture there, obviously building off the pitch, is now kind of transferring onto the pitch and the performances we see. And being disappointed in a mark like a loss against South Africa, where they've been in the contest for a large part of the game, is a pretty good place to be in. And with, you know, a wee while yet till the World Cup, a good amount of time to keep building and move into the Six Nations and try and compete against teams who are also playing really well. I think, you know, we're all of the home nations in particular have showed over this Autumn Nations that everyone's moving forward. So it's always a funny one, like when you focus on your own team, I think, and like you think that you see the improvements, and then you look at, take a little bit of a step back and you look and see, you know, England as well, showing a huge amount of depth and performances. Ireland playing France. Yeah, France. it's so easy to say, oh yeah, like everything's going really well, like we're building, and then you look a little bit further afield and you think, God, everyone has really stepped up. So it's a very exciting time in world rugby.
I think that's what's good about the fact that we're maybe the squad, I think, is terrific as well, but I do think just through speaking to players and listening to the snippets, there is more to come and they want more to come, and there's definitely bits they need to improve on. We spoke about maybe bits of the discipline or bits of the accuracy and execution now and again, or, you know, some set piece things, some kicking stuff, whatever it is. I think having that kind of undertone of, listen, we have to improve, is a really good thing, because in 10 weeks you play England at the start of the Six Nations, and then obviously we'll touch on other teams. But that, I think, is really important, that we're not coming out the back of the Autumn Nation series thinking, listen, we're on to something really special here. There's that undertone of, we have to improve as we do, but also because the level of opposition. I mean, I thought Ireland were incredible in the last two or three games. Like,
and France against New Zealand.
France are, and we've known France. We've seen that under-20s team won the, you know, World Championship 2 years in a bounce with most of the players that are involved now. Play some brilliant rugby. The one thing I'd say about the France-New Zealand game is, and I think France are brilliant, deserve to win, I think it needs two teams wanting to play quite open rugby for France to be as effective.
Yeah,
I just wonder if France came up against a team who was like, let's not play any rugby, South Africa can play rugby, but, you know, a team that would say, let's suffocate, let's strangle, would, and it probably might be, but do you think France would be
I think you're right, because a lot of their attacks came from quite like broken play and breakaways. Yeah. You know, there was one attack where I think they were pretty much on the try line and they broke about 80 metres up the pitch just through running and moving the ball, whereas most other teams would just set up a platform and kick and chase. So they definitely do play a much more kind of free flow and play what they see, and that suits playing a team like New Zealand. Well, suits France in terms of New Zealand are looking to do the same thing, and whereas South Africa, if they were up against them, are just going to suffocate them in those situations defensively. So, I think you are right. They probably had a good opportunity against New Zealand to play the way they like to play. But like you say, it might not be possible against all teams.
French set piece, scrum, line out, bulky.
The French defence was unbelievable. Like, especially in that last quarter of the game where New Zealand were really chasing it, they just couldn't do anything. You know, France were pushing them behind the try line time and time again at that last little bit, and that I thought was phenomenal from them to back up what was a really good attacking performance with a defence like that, and absolutely brutal.
No, they were amazing, France. Brilliant game to watch as well. The one thing the commentator said, I think from memory, was that New Zealand had played their 10th test match in 12 weeks in six different countries.
And been in a bubble for that whole different time. And been in a bubble, and,
you know, I mean, you're not making excuses, because France totally and utterly deserved to win it, but I think you maybe saw that influence New Zealand a wee bit, maybe South Africa and Australia as well in their games. I mean, but you know, England had to dig it out against South Africa, and that could have gone either way. The Wales Australia was the same, both last minute penalties. Great for Northern Hemisphere rugby to get these wins, but I do think Ireland were probably the form team of the series, really. And so dynamic and quick.
Yeah, definitely, and threats from everywhere. I think their forward pack are a little bit different to some of the other forward packs, in that they're very dynamic and quick, and a lot of, you know, kind of dynamic ball carriers looking to move the ball, and not just kind of big ball carriers, if that makes sense. So yeah, I think they were on form, and they look as well, like, seeing some of the off pitch stuff, that they're building a really good culture around their team as well, similar to what we're saying about Scotland, which again is massive part of playing well on the pitch.
What to look forward to. Before then, no, we've got well, Edinburgh and Glasgow are back to URC action this weekend, both away from home. Glasgow away in Benetton, Edinburgh away to Dragons, both games on Saturday. And it'll be interesting to see the returning players,
yeah,
the international players and the players who have been with Edinburgh and Glasgow, how the teams are selected, how they shape up, who potentially gets rested, who's ready to go. I think we'll see a fair number of internationals returning for both Edinburgh and Glasgow in two crucial games.
Yeah, just looking at them training this week, it looks like a few of the internationals are definitely back in. You'll know better than me, mostly, but so yeah, no, hopefully we'll see some of those boys that have had a run out in the autumn, and you know, they'll just add that intensity. They've been training and playing at you know, the highest intensity. So just bring that back into a squad who've, I believe both squads have been training with throughout the international break, and kind of probably looking, both teams looking for a good result this weekend. Just Benetton, obviously, probably the tougher of the two opponents for Warriors. They've had a really good start to their season, and a good season last season. So I imagine that'll be a pretty tough one for Glasgow. So I would think they'll be looking to put out as strong a team as they can.
Yeah, it'll be an interesting one, that, because that was the kind of watershed moment last year, wasn't it, in the Rainbow Cup, where Glasgow went out and they were beaten heavily. Like, it was, I can't remember the score, but it was 40 points, I think, at least.
Yeah.
Benetton, and they could do that. And I would say Benetton are probably better now than they were then.
Yeah, they seem to just be going from strength to strength.
Yeah, so they're at home, but there'll be a few players that would have played in that fixture in the last season, probably knowing what potentially could come. But look forward to that on Saturday. Then both teams, actually, it's important, I think, in this, there's two games in URC, two weekends of URC rugby before the break for Europe. But having Edinburgh and Glasgow having pretty good starts to the URC challenge, up kind of fourth, fifth position in the league. If you can back up two wins here before the European stuff, it's a really important window. And I know the players and the coaches will do different things at the start of this week in order to welcome back the international players, whether it's a social thing in the afternoon, or whether it's a meal out, or whether it's just getting them back into their Edinburgh bubble or their Glasgow bubble in terms of codes and relationships. Yeah. Because I think it's a really important two-week window. If you can pick up positive results now, and I think that the Irish teams play the Irish teams in this window as well.
Yeah.
So there'll be, you know, tough competition there. So for both Edinburgh and Glasgow, it's an important couple of weeks. Also, back to our return to sevens action for seven of our players this week in the men's and women's GB sevens tournament in Dubai. So you caught up with one or two of the players through the week. You said that they'll be, well, looking forward to a bit of sun on their back and a bit of sevens action with them out in Dubai.
Yeah, I think, you know, the GB sevens program's been amazing for all of them that have been involved in it. They've really loved it, and this is the last opportunity for them to go out as GB before they split off into their kind of respective unions. So I think both the men and the women, they're looking for, you know, as good a finish as they can, so to leave the program in the best place possible before they pick it up again, following probably the Commonwealth next year. I'm not sure they're 100% certain how it will look, but yeah, they start competition on Friday early morning, I believe, or early morning out in Dubai. But yeah, brilliant Scottish representation. So Shona and Lisa Thompson in the women's side, Shona Campbell obviously doing phenomenally well these last couple of weeks. First cap against Japan out in 15s, and she's been involved with the GB7s for the last couple of months. So she's been over in Loughborough training with them, and I believe doing really, really well. I think 7s really suits her style of play. She's, you know, quite an evasive winger. She's not just out and out pace. She's got brilliant skill set. She's very keen to learn and a much kind of more mature head on her than her age suggests. So no, she's doing really well. And then obviously five of the guys kind of retaining their places out there as well. So yeah, it's good for Scotland.
I think she'll be she is really good at sevens, but I think sevens will really suit her with that kind of evasive footwork and that power. And I remember playing Dubai a long time ago now, but it was actually a long, long time ago now, but the window, this kind of end of November, start of December window, I thought was really helpful, because I was playing 15s at the time as well, went and played sevens, and just in terms of, I joke about a bit of sun on your back, but in terms of an element of speed, sun on your back, came back, and I felt like kind of rejuvenized me for the next kind of block of 15 stuff as well. So I know like somebody like Robbie Ferguson will be coming back and looking at 15s as well, the others as well. So I think it's twofold. I think that they'll do well out there, but it can also really be another kind of, what's the word, a bit boost for the 15s when they come back.
Yeah, definitely. I think we've seen that with Lisa Thompson. You know, she's probably played some of the best rugby of her career this last season, whilst combining it with being part of the GB7 squad. So I think definitely the little boost they get from being away there and dropping back into 15s and bringing that kind of additional skill set to it, it has been brilliant for her, and I'm sure it'll be the same for the rest of them.
I hope that boost lasts into February for the qualification stuff's announced.
Yeah, so we will also be heading to Dubai in February for our final Repshaz tournament, and hope to qualify for the World Cup there. So yeah, they're out there doing a wee recce for us this weekend.
Who's got that gig?
Shona and Lisa Thompson.
All right, okay, yeah, of course. I thought you meant somebody being sent at wrecking. Oh yeah, of course.
No, I'd be first on that flight if there was an opportunity.
I thought you'd put your hand up for that. Look forward to that. So there's a bit of club action between then. The squad, you have camps? We have a meet-up one or two times before that
we meeting, so I think we actually have a meeting this evening to kind of discuss the programme going forward. But from our point of view, now that things are confirmed, I'd imagine we'll probably meet up throughout January. We tend to try and condense the programme to kind of close proximity to when we have our competitions. So we'll have a fair bit of time with club, which is, I think, a really positive
way to do that.
Well, yeah, it's nice to get a wee bit of consistency in your training, get a good training block behind you as well in terms of in the gym and on pitch and your skills and stuff like that. But also get some games under our belts. You know, camps are brilliant, but, you know, the best. So we played a lot internally in the lead up to them, those initial qualifiers. But sometimes I do think, you know, getting real life game exposure against, you know, teams you don't know as well and players you don't know as well is so beneficial for your rugby. So
you get asked different questions, don't you?
Exactly,
no matter how hard you work in internal games, you kind of know each other well, and you know
what
you're both trying to do.
Yeah.
So that element of surprise, that element of shock, that element of having to react to something you've not seen before is less likely in an internal game. So and also learning different bits and pieces from opposition you play against and things you can pick up over the next few weeks.
Yeah, so I think we'll have the next kind of, well, we've got four games down south for us before Christmas, so we'll definitely play in those four. And then January, I think, will be a wee bit of a mishmash between camps and a little bit of time with clubs to get some extra game time. And then, head into February firing, hopefully, is the plan. Yeah.
Flying. Sounds good. Well, good luck at Sandy Park this weekend.
Thank you very much.
Saturday or Sunday?
Saturday, yeah.
Saturday this week. Oh, well, good luck with that. And you have a few internationals returning in the last
week. So we both, we've got quite a variety of different internationals, Americans, Canadians and English girls as well. So we've got, I think, the majority returning. I'm not 100% certain yet. We've not had our team yet. I don't know if I'm actually playing or not. But, wait and see, I'm assuming. But so we'll hopefully have some of them come back in and boost us a little bit there as well. So yeah, exciting times.
Exciting. Thanks, Rach. And as I say, good luck this weekend. Good luck also to Edinburgh and Glasgow back in URC action. Glasgow away in Benetton, as we spoke about, and Edinburgh away at Dragons. Really important window for the two professional clubs. And we'll be back with more chat next week.